Hey all you role players, stop staring at Niska's horns and listen up. It's time for another episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a show dedicated to the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, tips, interviews, and reviews for the community, by the community. And now, here's your host.
Hello, I'm Trey, a.k.a. Astrotom Zero.
Hi, I'm Michelle, a.k.a. Liso.
And I'm Jay, a.k.a. Navinka Naroda.
My voice cracked.
It did.
I'm going through puberty, apparently.
Puberty?
Put some chapstick on it.
Hey, what's...
Jay, are you hugging your orange box?
No, I'm not, but I am excited about it.
I'm in the loop.
Wait, this is a podcast about Neverwinter Nights, sorry.
Yeah, but I'm going to talk about that anyway, because a lot of our listeners are...
Gamers.
PC gamers to the core.
Orange Box, what is it?
Orange Box is the latest release by publisher EA, who we've got some news about them coming up here in a minute,
that's why I brought it.
The Half-Life series, and they just released Half-Life 2, Chapter 2, a game called Portal, and Team Fortress 2, and
Games
a box
in one.
Set called the Orange Box. It's awesome. I can't wait to play some of it.
You haven't seen the commercials for that, Michelle?
No, I haven't. I don't watch TV hardly ever.
Hey, I've been playing some more of the OC. Because I know everybody tunes in every episode to find out how far we've gotten in the OC.
We've got to make that a new segment. Where Trey is in the OC.
I'm on my second run of Mask of the Betrayer.
Hey, wait a second. I'm not finished with my story.
Have you actually progressed?
Hey, easy there. Yes, I now... Almanjaro is now joined my party.
Oh, you finally got out of the Haven?
Yes, I did. It was fun. Although I was disappointed in what happened.
Why?
One of my favorite companions. I don't want to spoil it for Jay, so that's all I'll say.
Well, I've been spending more time in the tool set than I have in the OC, so. And fighting a nasty little issue where I had to uninstall Neverwinter Nights 2 and completely reinstall it again, so. I was not very happy about that. But everything's okay now.
Aren't you having trouble overall with your Windows or something like that?
Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder if it's my video card. It's real, my screen, even on boot up during the BIOS boot screen, is real. Got pixels not colored in, and sometimes it's different pixels and other pixels, and
say that fast.
I'm suffering some crashes, so it could be my video card drivers or something. I updated the latest; it's still giving me some trouble. So you've already finished the Mask of Betrayer, and I just bought it today, Michelle.
Yeah, I'm on my second run.
It's sitting over there in the box and having had the wrapper off of it yet.
What character did you play?
I started out with a shaman and really enjoyed her. However, because of all the bugs and everything, I did a complete fresh install of Neverwinter Nights 2, all the updates, the hotfix, and Mask of the Betrayer, and I decided to start over with something different. And I ended up playing a cleric / war priest, which she was pretty cool.
You were unable to bring your OC character forward into it?
I didn't want to bring anything. I wanted to play the new classes and all the new feats and stuff, and I figured with the character I already had previously, well, it just didn't mesh really well with all the new stuff. And the new stuff is really cool. The new classes are really cool. The new feats are really neat, and I'm enjoying it.
Tell us about one of them that you really like.
The shaman. The shaman is awesome. And so it's the new classes, the new character races, the elementals. The one I'm playing right now is the air elemental one, and she is really cool. Oh, and they are so pretty. But
the graphics are really cool.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I will have to say, though, that the game is a little buggy, and... they still have not fixed the follow problem. Companions are still not following. You're constantly having to repeat it still. You know, command issue and follow me, Well, it's annoying, but I guess I got so used to it with the first one that it's just habit now. But, and I will have to say that people will appreciate the ending much more than they did the OC.
So do you think they'll fix a lot of these bugs?
Oh God, I hope so.
Does it make it? I mean, is it worth waiting on the next patch or not?
Well, I have really no idea. My game actually crashes sometimes. I mean, it crashes entirely and falls. And you know how you get that little report bug error thing when it's something completely crashes, and that's happened a few times now. I'm not sure why.
Actually, I'm not sure what you're talking about, because actually my number 192 doesn't really crash that much.
Mine didn't either until I started playing Mask of the Betrayer.
Ew.
I've never had a crash with the regular, just the OC, but now that Mask of the Betrayer is installed, I am having crashes. Mm. And there's characters get hung up really easy. I had one get stuck on a mushroom, one got stuck on and some pole.
You know, too much mushroom will do that to you.
Yeah, she was hooked on the shrooms.
Hooked on shrooms.
I will also say this. There are areas that are extremely overpowering. Save often. I recommend saving before every battle, because there are several battles that are just total butt-kicking. And when your character dies... If all your characters die, or your character, I don't want to say, but there is a situation, if your character loses too much of something, it is final death, and you have to reload to a previous save.
Spirit? Is that spirit stuff I've been reading about?
Okay, well, yeah. Okay. I didn't want to say, because people who haven't even got into it yet really need to, you know, it's completely, and it's, wow. It gets easier as the campaign continues. However, at the beginning, it is a big pain in the butt.
I think everybody knows about that because all the reviews seem to mention it.
It is. It's a big hassle at first. But I found that the further you get into the game, the easier it is to manage. I don't know how easy it is to manage for an evil alignment. But for a good alignment, you can't go around obtaining the spirits, or you will lose your alignment because it's an evil act. So, but there are good and lawful acts, etc., that counterbalance it. And it does get easier as you go, and you get stronger, and you fight it easier. But I did it. The story is phenomenal. I absolutely love the story. The companions have a lot of depth. And at the end, when you fight the big guy, you only take one companion with you. And from what I could tell from reading, it's the same one for everybody. But that's it. I'm not telling you no more.
Okay.
Is there anything else to tell?
It rained for the last 3 days.
Was that Trey?
Hey, Jay, did you get some feedback from 27gaming.com?
Well, it wasn't necessarily feedback, but I was looking at our link tos, and I noticed I hadn't recognized this site, so I checked it out. And 27gaming.com is Grimwood Studios and Wandering Wizard Studios have joined forces to bring a new volunteer development team environment community. It's devoted to the production of high-quality single and multiplayer modules for Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2. And in the future, they may work on creating content for other games, but right now they're just working on that. The reason it struck my eye was that this site has just launched, and they've already have us linked. They have the podcast linked right after.
Oh, yes.
Neverwinter Connection, Neverwinter Nights, Neverwinter Nights 2, The Vault, and then us. So we're
fifth
on the list. So I registered on the site and been talking to a couple of guys over there to see what their development efforts are going to be like. So I just wanted to give them a little bit of coverage, and their new site just starting up. So if you're a development team looking for a project to work on, or not really sure what the direction is they're going to go here, if they're going to allow people to create their own projects there, kind of like a SourceForge kind of thing for gaming, but we'll keep our eyes on them and see what they're going to do there.
Oh, I smell an interview.
I just thought it was really interesting content.
I see Vivectus X. Looks like I see his name on the website. That name sounds familiar. I think he's been a long time listener, and he was one of the very first ones that did a frapper crapper pin.
Well, that's why we were linked very early on with their site going up. So I just wanted to appreciate those guys for linking to us and helping expose us. So Turnabout's Fair Play, 27gaming.com. Check it out.
Centuries before you fought the King of Shadows, another mighty hero walked the realms and led a rebellion against the Kingdom of the Dead. Now, his homeland suffers a curse. A dark hunger passed from one victim to the next. That hunger lives within you. And you must fight to survive.
Of course, you guys have been talking about Mask of the Betrayer because it just released the U.S. this week, and we all just either picked it up or have played through it at least once or have just gotten it. Taking a step back from that, because I know we're going to get back to the topic because we got some news on those. Have you guys hear what's going on with EA?
Yes, I have.
It's got everybody in a buzz.
Yes, it does.
Now, there's a reason why everybody's in a buzz.
Well, you know, I've heard a lot of people, and I've heard a lot of comments. I mean, Merrick instant messaged me and said, sound the word, EA's buying BioWare. It's the end of the world as we know it. And, don't go there. Don't do it. Don't. Nope. Nope. Not going to let you. Not going to let you. I'm going to keep talking until you stop.
You know what's funny is that is my ringtone on my cell phone.
Oh, it is cat, cool.
Cats.
I'm not joking.
Heard cats direction.
Pandemic and BioWare.
Yes, so they're picking up some big titles there for $620 million. And Michelle, I cut you off, but I know what you were going to get to, was that a lot of people think this is a very negative thing.
Although I've heard some people say
I've heard more negative than positive, but you know, we were talking about the Orange Box set, and I know that there are several people that we've played games with that are listeners that we've played Battlefield 2142, and we've talked about how much we enjoyed Half-Life and Half-Life 2. Both of those were published by EA. And the Orange Box set that we just bought, Trey and I, it's EA published as well. So it may not necessarily be a bad thing. And I also heard someone say that the CIO or the CEO, one of the head leaders of EA right now, was formerly the head of BioWare. So there are some good things there, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So
we'll see.
I'm going to try to reserve comment until we see what they're going to do with it.
I don't see how the Neverwinter Nights community... I mean, I don't see how it could die off because of this. If anything...
No, I don't think it will. It's just I think that...
seems like that's
there's
been
a lot of concerns about the future of what Neverwinter Nights will be with EA.
Okay.
Because, you know, BioWare right now still keeps quite a few community volunteers. They keep the BioWare and Neverwinter Nights forums up. Even though it's not a newly published title for them, they still put in a lot of effort around the community to keep that up. And I think the fear is that that's going to be pulled and seen as non-value added for their company. So they'll kill it. And I'm hoping they don't, because I think... Hopefully they'll listen to our podcast and think some of the marketplace ideas that they've heard would be really cool and start working to make some of that happen.
Yeah, I need to put that discussion together with those guys. So if you guys are listening, Dave, Bruce, and anybody else y'all want to join, I'm going to be contacting you soon to maybe have a round table about that whole discussion that happened in the comments several episodes ago.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea.
I read a little deal on Warcry, and I think you took advantage of this, Michelle. Said that they announced earlier, I guess last week, that Mask of Betrayer was available for digital download.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So how did that work with that?
It's actually a pretty decent deal. You pay what you would normally pay for the disc, $29-something, and it downloaded quite fast. They must have, you know, just a ridiculous amount of bandwidth. And I think I got all of it in less than an hour. And then you pay an additional $3.95, and what it does is it stores your code for 2 years. So if you change to a new computer, your hard drive blows up, whatever, you can re-download it for as many times as you need to for up to 2 years. And I downloaded it, went off without a hitch, never had a problem, and it was quite convenient.
Well, I'm curious.
2 years, I think I would want it forever.
And they even take PayPal, so.
That's cool. So do we. Gratuitous plug for donations.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. So, when you downloaded it, you didn't get to keep the file?
No, I don't. I probably
or
could
just
have
installed.
If I directed it somewhere else. Yeah, I just want to go ahead and let it install. If I did, I can still. If I directed it to go somewhere else, it would have downloaded and saved. But I didn't. I should have, but I didn't.
Was it through direct-to-drive, or was it directly from Atari?
It was directly from Atari.
Oh, so they didn't do the direct-to-drive thing this time.
Mm-mm.
Now, what I was curious about in the direct-to-drive downloads, when you got Neverwinter Nights 2, those downloads, from what I understand, did not have the CD check in it because they're, you know, actually had no CD to check.
Right, there is. You don't have to use a CD. I don't have to use a CD from the OC or Mask of Betrayer. I put in my code, and I have no CD.
So I'm wondering if that is a Mask of the Betrayer. Like, I've got the CD or the DVD, and if I install it, I wonder if it's going to continue to do the CD check on me or if it's going to remove it.
No, I have no idea. I don't have to put a CD in at all.
Because, you know, like in the BioWare Neverwinter Nights 1, it was the first or second patch that you got removed the CD check, or the first.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. So.
I hate having to remember putting my CD in all the time. It's actually, after I did the digital download and it did that no CD thing, I was like, oh yes, that's awesome.
Yep, that might have been worth it to do it that way.
Especially considering how many modules and stuff I play. I mean, it's just a constant putting the CD in.
Yeah, and then you wear your CD out, and then you can't get it to play or install because your CD's all scratched up.
What did you say, Jed? You said for Neverwinter Nights 2?
Neverwinter Nights 1.
Oh, okay, sorry.
When you did you bought the diamond set and then put the first, you patched it the first time after that, the CD check went away.
Right.
I thought you meant Neverwinter Nights 2, and I was going, hey, wait a second, I still got to put my CD in.
Yeah,
so
I don't have to.
I'm hoping with Mask of Betrayer that once we install Mask of Betrayer, the CD check will be gone. If it isn't, it might be worth it to look at the digital download if that's going to remove that.
Hey, I'll bet you after we post this episode, we'll find out because somebody will tell us in the comments.
Yeah, I hope so.
Are you guys going to carry your original characters over to the expansion, or are you going to try out one of the new ones?
I'll probably try out a new one.
I'll probably carry my one over first, and then the second time I play it.
In 2010.
Hey.
No, that'll be when I get to play it the first time. If you guys haven't checked out, check out the Neverwinter Nights 2 website at atari.com/NWN2. It's the new Mask of Betrayer site. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
They've got a lot of news and stuff on there about Mask of
Betrayer.
They've
already got walkthroughs growing up on this thing. People aren't messing around.
They're not.
The Thieves Guild has Act 1 already, and they're almost done with Act 2.
Really?
Yeah, I'm selfish, though. I just rather play rather than play a second, write down something, play a second, write down something. I'm just playing. If anybody wants to know anything, they can ask me.
I'll be honest with you. I will only go look at a walkthrough if I'm, like, stuck and I can't figure something out.
I won't even do it then. I will still keep trying and trying and trying. I hate
walkthroughs. Yeah, I mean, I will try and try, but if I can't figure it out, then I'll go check
it out. Unless it seems like a bug. If it seems like a bug and I can't manage to get around it, then I will go check a walkthrough out to see if maybe I'm having a problem or if I'm just an idiot and can't figure it out. But there's one quest in Mask of the Betrayer that almost sent me looking for a walkthrough. And well, I was getting so frustrated.
There was something that happened to me in the OC. I couldn't find something. I knew I had to go somewhere to find something, but I couldn't remember where it was. I can't remember. And so I went to look at the walkthrough, and then, oh, yeah, it's over there.
What was it?
I don't remember.
Oh. That's the problem. We're old and don't remember things.
Hey, easy. Speak for yourself.
Hey, you're older than me.
Okay, enough of that.
I'm older than both of you.
Hey there, Nerdle Winter Nights podcast gang. This is Carvo1, a.k.a. Charles, from the DMFI, our DM Friendly Initiative. I just want to pass along some news for you guys. Thought you might be interested. For one thing, recently our DMFI NWN2 tools package made it into the Neverwinter Vault Hall of Fame. We're very happy to see that. The original package author, Demetrius, and the rest of the design team have done a great job in providing a lot of new tools for DMs in-game that Obsidian didn't provide, and hopefully will enhance people's enjoyment of using the DM client. Also, we recently certified in the last month or so two original Neverwinter Nights modules. First, Muddles and Milton, by Quillmaster, is an excellent, you know, thoroughly documented DM-friendly module that's designed to be run only by a DM, but can serve as a central town or city or even wilderness setting for all sorts of interesting adventures. He includes really fabulous professional-level documentation in there, and I really encourage people to check that out. The other DM-friendly module certified recently was the Pretty Good Character Creator Customizer, a.k.a. PGC3. This was an excellent module. I'm sure you're all familiar with those kinds of modules that allow you to get in-game, create a new character for use in whatever other module you need. This is also a great tool for DMs because it allows you to set gold, custom items, everything else you need for an individual character or a party without having to worry about doing it all by hand. Also, about the NWN2 tools package, which I mentioned earlier, we're looking at putting out a new version 1.10, to match up with the new Mask of the Betrayer expansion and also the new patch. Our design team is working on that right now. I'm very excited about some of the changes that are coming along, bug fixes, and new features. So please come on over to the DMFI guild page. It's on the nwn.bioware.com site. Search under DMFI for guilds, and you'll see all the latest news and information. Thanks again, and hopefully I can catch an interview soon. Cheers.
Okay, Michelle, what kind of interview do you have to dish up for us this week, for this episode?
For this episode? There's actually a discussion on area building, and you have some very talented modders who... Well, our Bruce Nielsen, who's been on the show before, Jason Roy, who was on the show last week, Zach Hallbrook, who was also, he was runner-up for the mod contest, and he's also benchmarked some area building. He is like the topic of area building. I guess he's done some amazing things in the birthday. I don't know if you guys have played it or not, but it is absolutely beautiful. I don't know... He gives awesome atmosphere. He in all the little parts of the lands that he did, are full of atmosphere. He's an amazing builder. And Bruce,
you're saying he's full of hot air.
Trey, you're just not right. Bruce Nielsen gave perspective from Neverwinter Nights 1, and I guess he's also doing a module for Neverwinter Nights 2. So he's made the transition.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. He's to talk to people. Johnny Ree is the one who conducted the discussion. And I'm not in it. I just orchestrated. I stayed away from the mic.
You typed up the questions?
No. I did a couple, the first couple, and then he did the rest, and I had him not put them as questions necessarily, but as, you know, discussion starters in case it started to get slow. Well, grab a refreshment and sit back for an awesome discussion with Johnny Reed, Jason Roy, Zach Holbrook, and Bruce Nielsen. They did an area build discussion.
This is Johnny Ree, a.k.a. Just Ree, and today we're having a discussion on area design. I'm here today with Zach Holbrook, Jason Roy, and Bruce Nielsen. Hey, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
So I would like everyone to just, again, tell me who you are and what you've done.
I guess I'll start. I'm Zach Holbrook, a.k.a. Mayor Duin, and I have submitted the mod The Birthday to the Vault, and I've been modding now since about last November with the pre-sale tool set. I've been a big gamer, but I only just started design work about a year ago.
Excellent. And Jason?
Jason Roy here, a.k.a. J-Clef. I produced the Grim Brigade module and did some like little videos for Neverwinter Tonight, the Monster Manual when the Neverwinter Tonight's tool set came out. And I've been modding about a couple years now. Started with the Neverwinter Tonight's one. Didn't really finish anything, but that's basically when I started modding.
Well, that's great. I'm guessing most people are familiar with you, Bruce, but have an introduction anyway.
All right. Well, I'm Bruce Nielsen, and I'm sort of a semi-regular on the Neverwinter Nights podcast. I am the author of the Light Reborn series for Neverwinter Nights 1, and so I've been modding since Neverwinter Nights 1 came out. I can't even remember what year that was. Was that 2002 or 2003?
Not quite sure at the moment either, actually. So
it may have been 2001. I can't remember for sure.
It's been quite a while, that's for sure.
It's been quite a while. And I am also working on a mod for Neverwinter Nights 2 that is part of my series, but I have not released it yet, and to be frank, I still have a long ways to go. I'm working on it again, but there's just a lot of work to do, and Neverwinter Nights 2 requires a lot more work than Neverwinter Nights 1 does.
Yeah, so I've heard. And this is actually a part of what we are hoping to get into this discussion today as well, of the difference between Neverwinter Nights 1 and Neverwinter Nights 2 when it comes to area design and, well, creations in the toolset. So, to start off, I would like to ask you, Zach, about the birthday, because it's quite... a lot of people have spoken quite fondly about your area designs. So, what is the birthday at?
Well, basically, it's based on the fairy tale by the Grimm brothers. The contest asked you to base it around a Grimm fairy tale or that theme. And the particular tale is The Seven Kids, which it's not one of the most familiar. It's not like Little Red Riding Hood, but it's one that I particularly liked, and I had some strange and fond childhood memories of. So I kind of adapted that heavily to make the birthday. And you actually do get to read the fairy tale during the course of the birthday if you're lucky and can connect it to the overarching story.
Yes, I was actually able to accomplish that, and I found that a rather nice addition to it, which was fun. What sort of decisions did you make as for area design during the birthday? Is there anything you would like to address?
Sure. The main town, the one where you begin, well, there's only one town, it's Schaffberg, and it's in the middle of a large field. And I wanted to give a kind of sense of, a nice, rustic, rural atmosphere, peaceful, calm, which will be upset in the course of the game. But from the outset, it seems like a nice enough place, lots of yellow lighting, warm colors, and then to give a sense of space and a sense of the real world, I made a lot of distance. I used a lot of distance effects. So I made it look like there were rolling hills in the background, and used scaling to make objects appear further away than they really are. And then for the forest area, which is where you spend most of your time adventuring, I used very large trees, which some people had a problem with. Some people liked them, some people didn't. They do make it hard to navigate occasionally when you're running around fighting redcaps and sealies and whatever.
Right.
But I used large trees, and then as kind of a foil to the yellowish warm light of the town area, I had a kind of gloomy, dark, purple, claustrophobic atmosphere going.
Excellent. I did find you to accomplish this very well, especially the rolling hills part, and just the sense of it being really large, this area, which is great.
One of the constraints of the contest was that you could only use five areas. So I wanted to do as much as I possibly could with the areas that I had. I think it was five, right? I'm pretty sure.
It was five, totally.
Yeah, it was what? Five. So I wanted to do as much as I could and pack as much in as I could.
Absolutely. I do believe that sort of restraint kept people really focused on getting each of the areas really detailed.
Right.
Which I felt both of you, both Zach and Jason, was able to accomplish really well.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you.
So what, in your opinion, in general, makes a great area design in games?
Well, I think that attention to detail is probably the most important thing for me when I'm looking at areas. If the areas can create a sense of atmosphere that somehow jibes with what the game's theme is, or what it's what the atmosphere is supposed to evoke story-wise, then all the better. But attention to detail, so you know, careful texture choices, coloring, all of that kind of thing, and then if it looks like a place you would want to be, at least in your imagination, that's important too.
Definitely. What about you, Jason or Bruce?
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, like Zach said, attention to detail, you know, anything that will make you stop killing monsters for a second, you know, take a look around, you know, something like that.
Right. What about the general design of, let's say, what makes the player go forward, the size of things and the perspective of the player?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, great area design, you know, cut corners, you know, do things in certain ways, little, you know, trick of the eye deal. I mean, other than that, you know, you want to make a decent walk mesh. I know you can edit the walk mesh in the Neverwinter Nights 2, you know, tool set. So, you know, if you're going to build, like, this large hill, you don't want to make it, you know, walkable if it's, you know, 90 degrees to make it thick.
Right. Well, definitely.
Little things like that, that you'll avoid little things that will make it just, you know, ruin the player's experience in a sense, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. How about you, Bruce? I know you're definitely the one that has most experience in Neverwinter Nights 1 toolset, and how do you apply that there?
The sad truth is that it's hard to make Neverwinter Nights 1, because it used a tile set rather than openly being able to paint the areas, is that there was nothing you could really do to make an area look anything but generic. And I think that was one of the common problems with Neverwinter Nights 1 mods, is that it was hard to get too excited about them because they all looked kind of similar. And, of course, the way people got around that is they would do hack packs.
Yes.
So because my mods were aimed at online play and I wanted to keep it simple, I didn't use hack packs, and so I didn't... What I tried to do is I concentrated more on the actual game design and less on the area design. If it was sufficient, it was good. And I think one of the biggest tricks for Neverwinter Nights 1 was just to keep the areas small. And if you have an area of any size, you use every inch of it. Something, you know, there's stuff to do. And if it ever got too big, players would start complaining immediately.
Oh, yes, indeed. So how, well, you spoke a bit about the difference now between Gnomic Knights and Gnomic Knights 2. When it comes to the area design, the fact that you can paint the areas and make, well, actually sculpt the landscape as well. Are there any differences to the Gnomic Knights 2 toolset when it comes to inside design, as in, well, they do use tileset inside as well, don't they?
They do, but even that is somewhat different.
How does that work?
Well, that's more like, I don't know, like a puzzle, you know. You're not just going to paint down a tile, which, I mean, you do, but you got to connect it somehow with another tile to make, you know, have it make sense and connect these walls together. There's little corner pieces, and the best way I can describe it is just like a little puzzle that you're going to, you know, you lay it out on graph paper, and then you can just build it from there. It's very much like a puzzle piece, just kind of, I don't know, molding them together. And sometimes you get stuck with certain things that, you know, I can't go any further with this, or else I'll have to delete 5 tiles previous to this one, you know, and then you
right,
know how it
right.
is. Yeah, and so, you know, it's not as free, but it is. It's weird.
Yeah, one of the good things about the Neverwinter Nights 2 interior tile sets is the addition of the meta tiles, which can break up that kind of blocky rectangular structure you have with, you know, if you just use like the tiles themselves, the square tiles. So right. I found that particularly, I really like the ones that in the cave tile set. I think that those ones are pretty versatile and can really make for some interesting areas.
I agree.
The difference between the Neverwinter Night 1 tile set and the Neverwinter Night 2 tile set when you're talking interiors. In Neverwinter Nights 1, if I put a wall down, it put a wall down. And if I put something next to it, it would like figure out how to meld the two things I was putting next to each other to make it look right, which made it a lot easier to paint down your areas.
Right.
But it also gave you less freedom as to how you wanted it to look. In Neverwinter Nights 2, as an example, if I paint down a wall, I have to paint down the wall, and then as like a puzzle, like he was saying, I have to then paint the wall on the other side too, or else the wall is transparent from one side. And so there's more work involved with that, but then you also have a bit more freedom because of that.
Right, so creativity comes with a time price.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know,
and
when
yeah.
you get into the exterior design, a lot of, you know, with the Neverwinter, that's where the Neverwinter Nights 2 really shines, I think, with the height mapping, the texture painting, the color tool. You got, like, complete object freedom with tinting, resizing, and I don't know,
right.
I can't remember if Neverwinter Nights 1 had this, the Z-axis placement where you can, you know, you can sink things into the ground or, you know, there's a lot of freedom to it, and
It's overwhelming, too. I haven't done a lot with the Neverwinter Nights 1 toolset. I did, you know, the summer before NWN2 came out, I did experiment a little bit with it because I knew I wanted to jump into modding when 2 came out. But I didn't experiment that much. But I do realize the difference as far as 2 being so much more overwhelming. I mean, there's so much that you can do, and it's frustrating when you get to when you're modding. I'm working on this huge mod, and I just finished all of my exterior areas. Huge to me, by the way. It's not that big. But I just finished one of my exterior, my last exterior area, and I was like, wow. Because that feeling of opening up a new exterior, especially if it's big, and you have this, like, long lawn of green before you, and you know that you have to make that look at, like a rocky mountainside or whatever, it's daunting. It's really daunting.
Yeah, it can be, man. It can be.
So is this what you think is the reason for a lot of veterans in the Gnomic Knights, well, module creation community have a problem with making the switch
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think they just want to, you know, they want to tell an engaging and large story, you know, and maybe the emphasis for them isn't on, area design. You know, you want to be able to, like, complete the story, you know, and just get that out of your head and to your audience, you know. With Neverwinter Nights 2, a lot of the artists have, you know, taken the reins, you know, for this tool set because they have these pictures in their heads, you know, right. Like these cool areas, and they want to get those across. So it's two different forms of art.
I agree that they appeal to a different group of people. If what you're after is, you know, I have the story in mind, I want to take people through an interactive fiction, Neverwinter Nights 1 was so much better at allowing you to get that out and get it into right. an audience's hands. Where I'd have to agree. Neverwinter Nights 2 is more, at least allows for more of, okay, I got this idea in my mind of what this area looks like, and I can make it look like that. Where in Neverwinter Nights 1, you just couldn't. It was just wasn't possible. It was going to always look a lot like any other rural area. If you're dropping a rural area down, for instance, there wasn't that right. much you could do to make it look different. Let me just talk about my own experience with this. When I first started playing with the toolset for Neverwinter Nights 2, there was first that moment of where you look at the big wide open area and think, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? And then you start thinking, huh, I've got this idea in my head, and for my mod, I had this idea of an area where there was a... It's in a dark area, there's a vampire that rules the kingdom, and you can see his mansion sitting on top of a hill in the middle of the area, and you can look up at it from the village below that he's terrorizing. No way could I have done that in Neverwinter Nights 1. So I started going about, and I was getting really excited. Okay, I'm gonna make this, what's in my mind, actually real. And it was exciting, and then... After several months of working on that one area, off and on, at some point I started to realize, holy cow, I would have finished my first module by now.
Right.
In
Neverwinter
Nights 1.
Yeah.
But that I did finally finish that area. I've got one outdoor area.
Let's get some pics going.
Yeah, that sounds quite exciting, actually. That would be great to see some stuff on. Do you think, though, that this means we will see less deep stories created in Neverwinter Nights 2 and rather see artists creating great-looking modules? Or will people just team up?
Maybe, man. I mean, if you got, you know... People like me, I'm not going to deliver a good story. I mean, but you got people like Zach. You got people, you know.
Oh, stop.
No, seriously. No, I mean, you know, I think teaming up is probably going to be the best decision. You know, because it is time consuming, and if you want to create a good story, you know, a lot of people equate a good story to length. You know, so if you want that length, it's going to take a team. You know, if you want to pump it out and work on it for 2 years, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with that, and I mean you do see that a lot of teams have formed or are in the process of forming, and it is a big burden for just one person to have. I don't know much about the first tool set, but I do know that this one, you know, demands a lot of time, and you know, and even if you have polished and polished and polished one area, you can always polish it more. And
right.
you have to be able to draw that line somewhere too. I go through this thing with, you know, camera angles and conversations when I'm testing. I'm like, oh, I need to write that down and go back and change that camera angle. But at some point I'm gonna have to just not, you know.
That's it, man. Or you get a different camera angle, and then you notice that something in the background isn't right.
Right. Yeah.
So is there anything that can be done with the Neverwinter Nights 2 toolset to make it more appealing to the Neverwinter Nights 1 creators, to make it easier as such?
Well, I know that there are some plugins out there that they're like terrain generators, you know, and I think if... I haven't tested anything like that myself, but, you know, I mean, if they sharpen something like that up, it may do the trick, you know, as far as area design is concerned. Tree placement, they have automated, also through these programs that just automate all the exterior design, you know, with texturing, height mapping, tree placement, and along with that, the walk mesh cutter around the trees. So, I mean, in time, maybe, you know.
Can somebody post a link to those plugins?
Yeah, sure.
Because it would sure help for all future areas. There is no way I can go through and take the amount of effort I took on the first area I created. And mind you, it doesn't look, it looks good, it looks okay. It doesn't look that good. I mean, I don't have enough artistic, I would have to practice a lot more.
It takes practice, yeah.
So I would have to practice a lot more before I could make my area look anything like, say, the areas in the official campaign, which really do look pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, you could join a team too, you know? I mean, you're famous with the Neverwinter Nights 1 community. I'm sure that carries over to the Neverwinter Nights 2. If you posted something, you know, that you have a story involved in, if you want it, I mean, that just depends if you want to, you know? I'm sure people would jump to the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I've asked people if they're, you know, I've made posts before asking if anyone's interested in helping me out, and really I've never had anyone be interested. I think the issue is that there's plenty of people who want to create stories. There aren't that many people who want to build areas, which is what I need the most help with. And I think that's the most sorely lacking skill in the Neverwinter Nights 2 community.
Well, there doesn't seem to be a true community for the creative people either, though. Saying that they have the vault to put all the modules on and to put all this content on. However, there's no place to really discuss the content or to form teams, really, which I find lacking when it comes to creating custom content, because that's mainly what I do. And I feel it's the same with all of the area designers, storytellers, scripters and everything else. You truly have to just make acquaintances and contact them. That's the sensation I get anyway.
Right, man. I mean, yeah, they could add like a forum to, you know, the Neverwinter Nights 2 forums, just about team building or something like that. You know, people looking for other people specifically, because you see a lot of them. I see a lot of scattered posts for people looking for team members in the tool set forums, in the module forums, in these other forums. If there was a central place for everybody, you know, I think that'd be easier for people to find.
Well, I would think so anyway.
Let me respond to the question of what could be done to make it carry over better.
Absolutely.
First of all, although teams will work with Neverwinter Nights 2 so that a group can make more, I think we have to be mindful of the fact that a team is fundamentally harder to put together and to do, you know, in terms of getting it be cohesive long enough to actually produce something.
Definitely.
Is quite a bit harder than an individual doing it. And so if this tool can really only be useful in a team, then you should probably expect about 1/1000th or 1/10000th the output from Neverwinter Nights 1, which is probably about where we're at this point.
Yes, I agree.
And the other thing I was going to say is there are things that could be done to make it quite a bit easier. And I have no condemnation for Obsidian, who I am in awe of how much they did within the time frame they had for this game. And ultimately, they have to pay the bills. This goes back to the whole idea that I've brought up in previous podcasts. There's really no economic model here to justify what really needs to be done to make this a good community tool. I think these plugins you're talking about, which I am not really familiar with, sound like they're going in the right direction. In addition, they really need some way to be able to, like, cut and paste part of the terrain so that people can create, like, oh, okay, I've got a hill, and then I can cut and paste that into my landscape, you know, so I can, you know, people can upload a hill that I can cut and paste my landscape, or a forest, and so it's not just one whole area that you can import in, but you can, like, cut and paste parts of it and put it together. That would make a huge difference. In fact, really, if you think about it, that's the same as having a tile set, except that you can modify the tile set afterwards.
Sure.
That is really what was needed, and a lot more random generation, where I can say something like, you know, I just need a nice-looking forest, and boom, I've got a forest now. Which, you know, like, I haven't tried the tool set, but Oblivion has the ability to do that, from what I understand, where you can just say, okay, I'm generating a landscape, and I want it to be forested, and it will automatically figure that out for you. And then they really, to be a useful end tool for an individual, you've got to have stuff like that so that you can very quickly put something together, get something that's worked. The big issue with me is I have to have something working fairly soon or I lose interest. So the way I typically make my mods is, first of all, I keep each of them fairly short. And if I'm dealing with something like my rescue mod, which is a player versus player mod, I got the core player versus player game working and then started playing it with people so that I'd be interested in it, and then I would modify it and add to it over time. And, you know, over the course of a year, continue to add more and more and more to it until it was a very complex game. I've got to have something. It can't be not useful and I can't play it with people for a year or two or three or something. I'm just going to lose interest and I'm not going to do it anymore. So there's got to be a way for me to get something out quicker, and then I'd be happy to go back and spend more time making it look better later and making it really match my vision.
Right, man. I agree. It's got to be fun if you're doing it, you know.
Right.
It can't be like work.
It's true. And it often feels like it. But I do think that if you take a step back and you stop thinking too much about the end product, which is hard to do, and just try to enjoy the area design and messing with the terrain and really, you know, making real that picture you have in your head, that can help. So even if those tools don't come right away, it's still possible, I think, for an individual to do a lot. And again, it becomes a lot easier over time. Even though it's always going to be time consuming.
Right. I agree with you, man. I mean, yeah, and I like that, you know, when you're designing just a certain little area, you know, you try to picture yourself there, you know, and see, like, so you find little ways to make it fun.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent.
One more comment?
Yes, go on.
On an upside.
Yes.
So all this, the recent patch, the 1.10 patch, added character camera mode. That's been a huge boon. That actually was what got me started to actively working on my mod again, because it was more fun to play. It fit better with my vision of playing a character that's in this village with the vampire on the hill. Mm-hmm. The fact that now I'm doing an over the shoulder camera view with them. And frankly, the original camera views in Neverwinter Nights 2 were just broken. Every single one of them was broken.
Right. Yes.
And they seem to have a pretty fairly. It's not perfect. There's still little glitches, but they're just annoyances now. It seems to be a very working camera mode now. Does anybody else checked out the new camera modes?
Yeah.
That's true, man.
I actually had a little bit of a problem adjusting because I was so used to one particular camera before, but I realize now that these are much easier to use and probably superior. They're certainly superior as far as versatility goes and adapting them to your own play style.
Right, and the character mode cameras actually, it's nice because you see more of the, you know, the area itself. You're not just always like, I play in a top-down view, but with this camera mode, I'm getting really used to it, and I don't know, you see a lot more of the area and, you know, the background and everything like that,
right,
instead of just the ground as you're walking around.
Yeah.
I find it easier as a player to get into the character when you have a character sort of view. This means seeing the area design as it's meant to be, as well as getting into the mood of the character rather than sitting on top of him like some sort of god, just seeing everything around.
Right.
You mean like first person, like view?
Yeah, well, I haven't actually tested out the camera yet because I got the game today and haven't been able to play it yet. And I didn't patch up before today either. So therefore, I can't really say what exactly it looks like. Yes. Any further on that, though?
I think we've pretty much covered everything for now. Well, I mean, as far as that topic.
Yes, I would like to just hear if you've got some sort of ideas as to what they could add to the tool set to, in future additions to Neverwinter Nights 2, that would make it all easier.
four nice one people.
Well, aside from the area design, you know, well, maybe like an area design wizard or you know, something like that. I don't know. Personally, I'd like to bring back that quest wizard thing they had going on, the journal wizard or something like that, where you could easily just whip up, you know, a quest in a matter of, you know, minutes. And that's, you know, for me, that'd be pretty cool.
Well, we did sort of go into this earlier as well. However,
something that would improve the tool set would be something that would allow the area creator to create a gradual incline that is smooth. That's got to be one of the hardest things to do in the tool set.
Yeah, I agree there, but the smooth tool isn't so smooth, you know?
Yeah, it's more bubbly, if any.
Yeah. So, ultimately, what do you think about the community and their rights to us rating modules? Will area design have a lot more impact in Neverwinter Nights 2 than it had in Neverwinter Nights 1 to, let's say, storytelling, which would be most important?
Right. I think that depends on the person playing the module, because, you know, there are some people that will really, you know, pick apart the area design, but there are just some people that don't give a hoot and just want a nice story to be told, you know. And that seems to actually be the majority of people, and that's because this is a story-based, you know, storytelling game, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't found, you know, just through reading through comments on the vault, I haven't found that people are, you know, particularly critical of, you know, area design. They seem to be pretty accepting, and they do seem to make their judgments much more on the basis of, you know, how fun it is, how fun the combat is, how balanced it is, what the story is like, than they are about area design.
You know, let me give my two cents here. I would suspect area design will play a much bigger role. The problem with area design is that people aren't going to say, wow, that mod had really great area design, unless it's really good, unless it's to the point where it's just standing out compared to other mods. It seems like what would be the more common problem would be that the area design is poor and it looks corny. You know, it's just distracting.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Special, Mario 3, it's like, yeah, special effects in a movie.
Right.
It's like special effects in a movie. If you've got really good special effects, people might notice. Okay, but normally you don't think about it. It just looks real, yeah, and you don't really even think about it as being a special effect.
Good call.
If you've got really corny special effects, no one can enjoy the movie anymore. Even right, if the story's good, the acting's good, they kill it.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of an invisible force. I think graphics in computer games are kind of the equivalent to special effects. People say things like, I don't care about graphics. There may be some small group of people out there that's actually true of, but the vast majority of people, it makes a difference what the graphics are like. In Neverwinter Nights 1, while it would look generic, it would always look good. You know, I mean, it was never distracting. It was never low quality because it wouldn't let you. It would fix it for you, you know, if you were trying to do something, it would not let you do it or whatever. But in Neverwinter Nights 2, it lets you shoot yourself in the foot, and if you're not really careful, you will shoot yourself in the foot. For example, I started using the, there's a tool that's a texture tool where it would like mix bumpy ground. Well,
oh,
this
yeah,
what
yeah,
happens.
The noise.
It will all,
don't use that.
It will also rip the world apart at the seams.
Yeah.
And so I went around making all this bumpy ground, and then I started playing it, and the whole world was ripped apart at every seam it had.
Yeah. I had that problem.
Well, I'm thinking about ending this discussion with some tips and tricks from great area designers, both for Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2. Are there anything you would like to share with the listeners?
Sure. I mean, one thing that seems obvious, but I think is really useful, is if you have a kind of idea of what the environment you're designing is going to look like, that you go up and Google image search or whatever for pictures of forests or mountains or whatever and have those around and look at them as you're doing your area design. That's been a big help to me. And also, you know, those images can serve as inspiration.
That's a really good idea.
I mean, even if you want to look at, you know, how cities are laid out, medieval villages or whatever, that kind of thing is really, really helpful, I found.
Totally. Another one, I mean, like, as far as area design itself, what's good to do is, you know, if you want to get real detailed with your area, shape it out first, and then let the area from there guide you. Go into, you know, all the crevices. Use the shading tool a little bit on those, you know, on those crevices. If you see something that dips and there's a tree near it, you know, falling leaves or something, obviously the leaves are going to fall in. Try to make it, you know, you know, pay attention, you know, as you go, and really take a look at little things like that. It's really going to help you get a great area going.
I totally agree with that. You know, you just kind of let the way you've sculpted it guide how you texture it. And where you put certain things, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely a way to go.
Okay, I've got a couple tips. This is coming from the point of view of someone who is really not that good at area design at this point, and I don't really have an artist background or even an artist's bone in me, to be perfectly honest. So these are tips not for advanced people. These are tips for people like me who just want to be able to make an area that is passable so that they can, you know, get started and get going with Neverwinter Nights 2. One of the first things I noticed is that if you're going to do, if you're going to have, like, a mountain, one of the best ways to make it look good without too much effort is to put steps in the mountain instead of trying to make it an incline all the way up. Making it an incline all the way up rather than steps tends to stretch the textures, and they don't look good anymore. And if you've got a good artist's eye, you can figure out how to make them look right. I don't have a good artist's eye that way, so instead I found that if you make more steps, it still looks quite good, but it doesn't stretch the textures too much because they're steps. Do you understand what I'm saying by steps, where it goes up a little bit and then maybe it goes flat a little while?
You know, say you got like a pyramid mountain tool or something like that going on. Start from the top and use the smooth tool. And just zigzag like a snake all the way down one side, and you'll create this kind of, you know. And at the same time, you give more area for running, which makes it longer, and the player has more time to, you know, enjoy the area.
Okay, so that's one tip. Another one is look a lot at placeables with Neverwinter Nights 2. Placeables in Neverwinter Nights 1, again, they were kind of like Neverwinter Nights 1 in general. They were just passing in most cases. You could spice up an area a little bit with placeables, but you couldn't do very much with them. In Neverwinter Nights 2, placeables are key to making the area look good. The tile sets in Neverwinter Nights 2 are actually more generic then in Neverwinter Nights 1, they're counting on you using placeables. And you can stack placeables now. The placeables look really good. And they can be more or less merged into the area design now, which you couldn't do that before. And even for the outside, this keeps amazing me. I have to like go through and look through the placeables and figure out what people are doing in other mods. But like they have placeables that look like the side of a mountain, and they look really realistic.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Yeah, those are some of my favorite placeables. Those rock face placeables.
Yes,
those are great. Yeah.
Yes, and so I know when I first got started, I was like perplexed. I'm like looking at something in the official campaign, saying, "How did they do that?" And eventually, I realized it's just one big placeable.
Right.
Yeah.
And so. And so I mean that I think that is. A tip that I would pass along to someone who's starting off, that there's a lot you can do with placeables in the tool set, and that's something you need to spend some time going through and looking at that. Buildings are placeables now. It just amazes me compared to Neverwinter Nights 1, where they were part of the tile set. You can put a building anywhere. You can put a building inside of another building now because they're just placeables.
Right.
And so I think that gives you a lot of versatility, and it's actually a fairly quick way to start making your areas look better is by throwing those placeables on there and filling it up. Okay, sorry to take so much time. One last tip. If in Neverwinter Nights 1, the big trick for area design was to keep the area small while still using every area, I mean every part of the area, not letting it ever be empty, I think the trick for Neverwinter Nights 2 may not be so much whether it's small or large, because I think a large area could be appropriate for Neverwinter Nights 2, but I still think it's a matter of making sure that there's always something to do with every square foot of the area, you know, or
right.
square area in there. There's got to nothing really annoys players quicker than just having nothing to do and you're wandering around and there's nothing. And even in the official campaign, I noticed in Neverwinter Nights 2, they did that too often. Where they'd have like these random encounter areas and you'd kind of like walk through a set of hills and there's really just nothing there. You know, there's like two encounters across everywhere you wander. I really think that areas work better if you start thinking in terms of, okay, if I've got a 4x4 area, how many encounters can I fit into this area? How many interesting, diverse terrain types can I fit into this area that still look natural together? And start working towards blending that together so that it's not all a hill or all the plains or a rural area or something like that.
Right. Yeah, another thing, you know, I mean, if you're going to have a lot of placeables too, because, you know, that's what you're going to be working with a lot of them. You know, make sure they're not going to be taking up too much power. You want to right-click and choose, you know, you can turn it into an environmental object if it's not going to be usable by the player. Other things like trees that maybe, you know, might be off in the distance, there's an option so you can have it, you know, not cast shadows or receive shadows, little things like that that can save power and make, you know, a detailed area functional at the same time on the end user's side. You know, as far as, you know, a performance tip.
Yeah, I think the same goes for grass, too. A lot of people, I was really, really happy to see how much grass there was, and I was really excited to use it because it looked so good. But it can really clog performance, and it's actually not that necessary, especially, and this is a trick that I like to use, especially if you match the color of the texture to the color of the grass. It's really not necessary to have very much of it at all.
Right.
And I always try to make the grass not max out because, you know, you have a max per each terrain tile. You know, keep it below that and don't swamp the area with it. And make sure that the texture that you're using matches the color of the grass. And it'll give the effect of having, you know, a whole field of it.
Well said, man.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to try that now.
It's a good one.
Well, the thing I find to be most important is the ability for modders to put themselves in the player's shoes and trick the player into believing they're somewhere they're not necessarily are. This means, and I want to refer to Jason's Grim Brigades, because I love the final mission there. Special.
Thanks, because
you have this forest there, this very dark forest, and I noticed the fact that there weren't really all that many trees there, and even though there weren't, you still got this feeling of being in this very tight and dark forest. And I believe a lot of people should think about how can I trick the player without just creating a forest. Because it's easy to just create a large area with loads of trees, with a bit of random terrain, and say, okay, this is a forest. However, if you're able to use less resources and just more mood setting to make the player believe that you're in a dark forest instead of actually just creating lots of trees, I think you accomplish both the game running smoother and to give the player more of a atmospheric feel.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the claustrophobia thing was that was just raising the size of the terrain. I noticed that one thing that Zach did was, you know, it may look like a lot of trees, but those are placeables, you know. Those don't take up a lot of resources either, and that was a good trick right there as well.
Absolutely.
Another thing which I think is really useful for creating atmosphere is, you know, the lighting effects. Those can really make or break an area. There are actually places in the OC where the lighting, I think, is terrible. particularly the Neverwinter docks. The sky at sunset there is always like bright pink, and it just looks bad. So you should try to, if you want to make a consistent atmosphere for your mod, you should really pay attention to the colors you're using for the day-night cycle and the cloud cover and all of that.
Good call. And you can use the default as the scratch pad. That way, you know, it won't cycle through the day or night, you know, while you're working on it sometimes. And, yeah, I totally agree with that lighting. And, you know, the easiest thing to do, if you just want to check out different lightings, I got the tool set open, just go to the area options, and it's just this one field inside of the day-night cycle setting. You can go to default or sunset or whatever. Inside the ground light, I believe it's the diffuse color.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an easy way just to check out mood settings, you know, for one color at a time. That way it can save you a lot of time on deciding, you know.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure all of you have got different reasons for why you create modules. However, I'm guessing most people listening to this podcast does not. So why should people get into design or area design and module creation in general?
I find it a really rewarding experience because of all that's available for you to take control of in the tool set. You know, you can work on area design and really create something that looks like a place you'd want to be, but you can also write a story, and then when you're feeling mathematical or programmatic or whatever, you can script. And so you can do all of these different things, and whenever you get tired of one, you can move on to another. And that's one thing that I found really useful as far as keeping up my drive, is the fact that, okay, I'm tired with this right now. It's not as rewarding as it could be, but I can do this other totally different thing, and it's all contributing to the same product.
Right, I agree with that 100%. And the cool thing about, you know, modding in general, whether it's Neverwinter Nights, Oblivion, Unreal Tournament, it encompasses all forms of art, you know. Music, you can put your own custom music to it. If you want to do modeling and, you know, texture work or any kind of thing like that, you know, it's a nice medium for anybody to do some work on, you know, and enjoy it and have others enjoy it, you know, the end product.
Yeah. That's the other thing, is that, you know, you get to produce something that, you know, potentially thousands of people will enjoy, hopefully.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm going to end the discussion there, and I would like to thank Zach, Jason, and Bruce for coming here tonight and to having this discussion.
You are very welcome.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed the show and would like to help out, we recommend clicking on the PayPal donate link on our website. Placing a few gold pieces in the coffers will go a long way in supporting our efforts. What are coffers?
A bunch of sick people.
They're what?
A bunch of sick people.
Look it up.
Google
it. Why should I Google it when I can jiggle it?
In architecture, a coffer, plural, coffering, is a sunken panel in the shape of a square, rectangle, or octagon that serves as a decorative device.
That sounds excellent. Like it applies.
Usually in a ceiling.
Yeah, we need some gold pieces in one of those. What are we going to have for our next episode? For our next episode, we will have something that we don't know about yet. So stay tuned. For our next episode, we're hoping that we're going to have an interview with Kaveen from theshadowthieves.net. He owns the Galsbird Persistent World that we've been having our event on. So I'm hoping between now and the next episode that we'll have that interview. What do y'all think about that?
Yay! If you have any comments or questions, you can contact us at show@neverwinternightspodcast or
you can leave an audio comment or question via Skype by calling Neverwinternight NWN Podcast, all one word.
Until next week, get in game and
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, or their partners and employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, which is solely responsible for its content.
Okay.
No. Okay, okay on that one. Alrighty.
Luke, I am your father. And your brothers, brothers, sisters, next door neighbor, too.
Or in the file. It's not in the file. If it's not in the file, you won't.
Hey.
Orange box.
Hey. Hey. I'm Trey, a.k.a. Ashkan Zilo.
I'm Michelle, a.k.a. Liso. Are we boring you?
I'm downloading a module.
What's wrong with further ado?
Oh, that is so lame.
See, I'm going to put that laugh in there over and over.
In fortification, a coffer was a hollow lodgment against a dry moat from 6 to 7 feet deep and from 16 to 18 feet broad, the upper part being made of pieces of timber raised 2 feet above the level of the moat. The besieged generally made use of these coffers to repulse the besiegers when they tried to pass the ditch.
You're expecting a lot out of our listeners.
Okay, we don't want to put our gold in that one, the other one, the first one. So what
I'll
do we have
hold,
for...
I'll just hold what? A cup out.
Coffer, a strong box, often coffers, financial resources or funds, a treasury, stole money from the Union coffers. Architecture, a decorative sunken panel in a ceiling dome, soffit, or vault. The chamber formed by a channel lock, a coffer dam, a floating dock.
Somebody turn him off.
To put in a coffer.
Who's I? Who's me?
Oh.
Me.
Yeah. Okay.
What? I just got lightheaded because I laughed so hard. Okay. We're done.
Boy.
Bye, Trey.
Bye.